You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
And welcome to another episode of Knights at the Round Table.
Wow.
Fancy.
What?
Welcome. I am in Indianapolis. Be Real is in LA. And we got Bo Beast back with us because literally the queen is on stage right now doing her thing in Indy, Annapolis. Yeah, and Bo Beast is in the OC. So we're all home. So if you're watching us,
but he's in California. I don't like being. I haven't owned the OC yet. Still, yeah. At least from California, okay?
At least from Southern California.
From Southern Cal. Bobies is in Southern California somewhere. Nice. And we are grateful that she is here with us. We are on tour right now. So Ange is busy and we have to keep shooting. So I'm so glad that you were able to join us, Bobies. And she is actually... We've been starting off all of our episodes with these wordiful games, and she's
remember
actually.
Remember, I made fun of it, you guys. I made fun of it, and now.
Yeah, and now you're going to be the maestra.
Now you're a little addict. Fun.
I need you to.
The story of my life.
Pick two good ones. Let's go.
Okay. Do we have a certain category that we want to
put
on this evening?
Game master, do your thing.
Whatever your heart is feeling.
Okay.
Ooh.
Relationships.
Oh, here we go again.
Okay, what is a deal breaker in a relationship, Brandon?
If the partner is lazy and not working towards anything. Because I feel like that's something, because I was in a relationship with a girl like this.
We know.
And as much as I wanted to put that drive, like, hey, we want you to work towards something. We want you to go out. I want you looking for a job or go back to school, all these sorts of things. It just was not in her. So then it was just me cutting the check every time, spending all this bread. And there was nothing reciprocated on the other end. Not that it's all about money, but it's about the principle.
Yeah.
So to me, if someone's lazy and not working towards anything, deal breaker for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for me, it's someone who doesn't do what they say they're gonna do. Mm. You're a bullshitter. Can't rock with you.
Well, I have a question. How long does it take you then to find out the lazy thing, and then how long does it take to find out? Because if someone just a one-off doesn't like say they're gonna do something and then like something fell through or whatever, right? Like, how long do you think it takes you to find out the deal breaker?
It has to be some like it's not. Well, let me stop, because if it's the small things that really matter, like, I mean, I guess, okay, example that I wouldn't care about too much. Person says they're going to take out the trash. I get home, the trash isn't taken out. There could be a myriad of reasons why they weren't able to take it out. Probably important, right? Something more important, like this goes with bees, if they're like, I really want to become a doctor. And I'm like, that's amazing. Let's do this. You know, like, what's first steps? Okay, I have to get into med school. I got to study. Awesome. I will help you study. And then I never hear about it again. Then I'm like, bruh, I'm out. Mm-hmm. I'm out. It's too big of a deal. Like, if you don't love yourself enough to accomplish your goals, there ain't no way you're going to help me get mine.
Say
that's
that.
Good.
So
that's good. I think mine, apart from like, I guess, identity theft, you know what I mean? Would be someone who would
oh, man.
Y'all need a second. You okay? All right, Brandon? You all right? Yeah,
I'm all right. It's, I already had the bid, so that's not a bid.
I think mine, though, on the same lines, would be someone that doesn't have his finances in order. Like, someone that is messy with their finances or is secretive. And I'm not saying first date. Like, what's social security number? Tell me now.
Yeah. What's your credit score?
What's your credit? I need to know because at this point, well, just go back and listen to the earlier episodes, people. But I think that for me, because, and it's not just financial, it tells me about his responsibility and it tells me about so many other areas of his life, not just finance, and tells me how much I can spend. Do you know what I mean? So
I said that in the same episode when we talked about money, like, yeah. Your money tells me everything I need to know about you.
Mm-hmm.
Everything.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Next one. Do you want to pick from intimacy or emotions? First one.
Intimacy. Go intimacy. I don't think we've done intimacy yet.
Okay. What is your idea of the perfect date? Relationship ones tonight. We love it. We love to see it.
For me, I think it's kind of easy.
Y'all are married.
Yeah,
I'm simple. Like, for me, a perfect date. Well, if we're keeping it low key,
it is your perfect date. There's no parameters.
Yeah, I'm hella simple. Let's take a drive through the hills, top down, end up in Malibu, you know, maybe get a little sush over there at where's that one we always go to be?
Was it Moonshadow?
Moonshadow. Do a little of that.
What he's saying is Brandon and him have had the perfect date.
And we have.
And then we drive over to a movie theater and catch a movie. And then end the night on some sexual escapades.
Oh, yeah.
Nice. Yeah.
For me, too. It's pretty simple. It would be spending some time either watching some shows, going to a movie, having a nice dinner. I love to, like, twice a month right now, I take Maddie to a new restaurant. We go out, have a little date night. And then we come back and we just appreciate each other. You know what I'm saying?
Nice. I think mine's different from you guys because you guys have been married. So that's kind of interesting because I think on my perfect date right now, I think probably three dates in. I'm not the person that's like on the calendar, like June 12th. But I think for me, it's a couple, like I have to know someone. Like I think immediately, how well do I know them? Because first dates suck. I hate first dates. Like, oh my gosh. I hate them. I don't want to tell the same stories. I don't want you to ask me what I do for a living. I don't know how to explain it. Like,
yeah.
I hate first dates. So I'm about like three dates in when you have a crush on them and like you get butterflies and it's like, I want all their attention all day. So it doesn't really matter what we're doing. Just like, I want your attention and something fun. Like, I don't like to just sit across from someone every single time and have like food every single, like I want to do stuff. So I don't know if it's summer, something.
Is
on the
there,
water
is there like, something that since you've been in the dating pool, I haven't been there since. Is there a preferred activity that you have found that gets people talkative, like honest conversation? Like, is there an activity? Is
alcohol?
Because you know, it's LA. Oh, it's alcohol. Because I was about to say
no.
Hiking.
I would say
because LA is really hike a lot.
I think like I hate hikes like for a date. Like I just think it's a guy's excuse to like see my butt, and I'm like no. But I do think that I haven't done this yet, but I've heard wine and paint nights are like
wine and paint
are good for that. I was going to say jet skiing, but I guess it doesn't really, I think I just saw it on Hitch once, but I think that like,
but also
for me,
better
yeah.
to see your butt.
Yeah. Also they can see my butt, I guess. That's true. At least I'm in the water, you know, why not? Rather than just like sweating and walking. But I think that anything where, I mean, yeah, I would say a wine and paint night off the top of my head. Anything with like a group of people, they're like a beach day. I've done that before on a date, like with a couple of friends, with a guy that I was seeing. And like games show you a lot about a person. So even like a beach volleyball situation or
yeah, like a charades or something, like a competitive. Like
shows you a lot.
Man, yeah. I wonder if I'd be the worst because I'm competitive. I'd probably be the worst to be like, you need to bail on this guy. He wants to win everything.
That guy is sweating so much. Like, bro, this volleyball game doesn't matter. I need you guys to communicate. Come
on. Hi, Queen.
I am back.
Just got off the stage.
It's Angela.
We love you.
Hi, everyone. I just got off stage in Indianapolis, and I just came in to grab my food. Continue.
If you guys need to be following us on YouTube so you can see our...
Exactly. She looks so pretty.
I'm definitely the worst.
I guess I don't really have a perfect date. It's just something, and then I get to like make out with him for sure. You know what I mean?
So. Yeah.
Or go further. You know, it's no shame.
What,
no shame.
Brandon? This is a public podcast. Stop.
Intimacy.
A public podcast.
Hey, you know, intimacy. Yeah. Anyways, that is a great lead in of what we're talking about.
Love
today.
It.
Sort of, not really. So. The thought for this podcast was, there's this comedian named Lil Duval, and if you don't follow him, I don't necessarily suggest you follow him because he could get really ratchet on Twitter. And but he has this thing he tweets out every single week, and it says this. The question is, what y'all fake caring about today?
Mm. Dang.
And it's funny because this really got me. I remember reading this tweet like some months ago, and I really started thinking about that. And I was even trying to like ask that question in my own life.
What are you fake caring about?
What are you fake caring about today? Because people, it feels like every single day on social media, there are so many little things that people are caring about. And when you look at it and you remove those things, like I took a break from Instagram last year. I'm not really on socials that much. But I realized once I started taking a step back, I actually stopped caring about things that I supposedly really cared about.
Wow.
So it led me to the conclusion that oftentimes most of us are just mirroring the group feelings versus us actually discovering who we are and what we are actually about.
Dang.
I think most people here live their lives in this sort of hall of mirrors. Okay. People are caught up in the latest monthly media drama. They're caught up in the latest conspiracy theory, the latest projection, the latest conversation that's happening with so-and-so. And without you realizing it, all of a sudden you are fake caring about these things that you actually don't care about. It's just because the rest of the group is, and you are surrounded by this hall of mirrors that is completely mirroring the same thing. And so it kind of started getting me on this journey of like, wow, like if I call myself a Christian, which I still identify as a Christian, Christ follower, am I supposed to be getting caught up in all this bullshit? Like if Jesus truly died for my sins and he gives us the kingdom of God, which is supposed to transform my life, does that still give me the permission to care about this thing? And so then all of a sudden, I'm just like, I've been on this journey of like, man, am I just a mirror or actually have I been transformed? And again, this conversation, I obviously want to open this up, but it's so funny because you think about how much of the church world, how many pastors, how many well notable Christian celebrities that you know truly have not been transformed. Their ministries and their churches are still run by fragile egos, superficial intellectual thoughts, and just it's just purely emotional. And I'm saying, oh, where we see Christianity as a whole today is a reflection of this. It's that most of people's Christianity has not transformed them. They're still simply just a mirror of the group that they're surrounded by.
Yeah.
May I jump in?
Go for it.
Just right off the bat. Because when you're talking, I see so much of me and myself of where I still have to grow, right? But you know, my first thought was it reminded me of me being in high school.
Yeah.
Like this didn't start when I mean, I've always been in church, I guess. Me and B have a similar story in that. But like when you started talking, what are we fake caring about today? I remember 12 or 13-year-old Elise trying to be in the cool group and trying to figure out as a church kid, good God, the poor little darling, what mattered that week. because I, whether I was at the party on the weekend or not, I had to try and figure out what everyone liked so that I could fake like that so that I could be accepted. I remember the cool guy group and the cool girl group deciding that they were going to be boyfriend and girlfriend. And I was just pumped because I got like, I got to like pretend date. Oh, what was his name? Maybe Matt Stedman. No, Mitchell Dooley. Mm-hmm.
Mitchell and I was Dooley.
Like, I got the last one. I got the, no offense, Mitchell. I'm sure you're lovely now. But like, I got the last guy, but I was still in the cool group because they were like, so at least you're going to like Mitchell. And I was like, okay, sick. Yeah. I love him so much. We're going to get married. Like,
yeah.
And I remember playing a game on people even in school where I would be like, oh my God, I love Diet Coke. And then everyone would be like, oh my gosh, me too. And I'd be like, oh, did I say Diet Coke? I meant like normal Coke. And they were like, oh yeah. My God, that's what actually I meant too. Like from a little girl, I know how to shapeshift. So it actually stemmed from being a little girl in school to even in green rooms in church to be like, yeah. What are we fake caring about this week? And it's so mm-hmm. interesting to me how this isn't even just a pattern in church. This is a pattern in humanity, it feels like.
Yeah.
I mean, can you identify something that even recently that you fake cared about?
Recently, I felt pressure to care about, but I've just kind of stopped. Oh,
what is that though?
Talking about stuff.
I'm curious.
Unless I'm going to die on that hill. So to me, I felt for a while, like on social media, I had to come out about everything I believed and every single standpoint. Mm-hmm. And I've also had to realize, hey, I don't know if that's what God's called me to pursue on mission. That doesn't mean I don't have opinions about everything. I have opinions about everything, and some people would agree and many people would disagree depending on where you stand in religion and politics and all of the other things. But for me, something recently has been actually my decision to release myself of the pressure to not have to voice on everything just because I have an opinion on something in private. For a while, especially around 2020, 2021, I felt like I had to have a very vocal opinion on everything. And
I'll tell you something that a lot of people fake care about is abortion.
That has been a massive this week.
And obviously, if you've followed any sort of news, you understand what's happening. At some documents have been leaked to Supreme Court that they're possibly going to overturn Roe versus Wade, which is a very crucial decision in our country. And because that's been one of the hinge points of conservative beliefs and values, you see all these Christians who don't give a fuck about abortion. All of a sudden are like, oh my God, I'm pro-life. We got to save the babies, all this sorts of stuff. And I'm just like, there's so many things wrong with this, okay? One, that is not your body. You don't have a say-so, okay? I think even if you're going deeper, I think that there could be some biblical arguments that life doesn't actually start at conception. Life actually starts at first breath, right? We see in Genesis 1, what does God do? He breathes the breath of life, and then life is now entered. So it's not until that breath is taken. Other thing is, too, when you see about abortion, who does it affect the most, right? So it's a deeper conversation of just like, we're just out here just killing babies. This is a deeper conversation on race and class, because this disproportionately affects Black and brown women in lower classes. So it's kind of like, you don't really care about abortion because you know what? You would adopt if you cared so much about saving these children. There's so many little things. But I feel like because it's such a big thing, it's like, we fake care about it. So I get to post something on Instagram and it makes me pro-life, but you're still pro-death penalty and you're still pro-war and you're not pro-life. It's a scam. So to me, this is a huge example because I once was on the other side. I was like, man, I was at these rallies. I was raising money. You know, I was very adamant about overturning Roe versus Wade in my very Christian days. But I'm not that anymore. I'm not that guy because I'm like, one, I realized I didn't really care about this. And then two, when I did my own research and really realized, I was like, oh, this is far more of a nuanced conversation. This isn't just a black and white thing.
Do you think then it's not really that they don't care about the killing of the baby? I think they care about the black and white of it.
Yeah.
But they don't care about the nuance of it. It's kind of like you just get right to the thing, which I think all people are like, we don't want to. No, I don't think anybody wants to kill babies. Like, I don't know if that's the goal in all of it. So it's like you beeline straight to that, which which as a society, I think everybody can be like, yes, we are all on the non-killing baby side, you know? Right. I think maybe where the caring stops is in the nuance, is in the the minutia, like the
in the actual, like, what other options are we giving these women?
I had a really surreal moment actually this week. I had just come off an interview for Lightworkers with Zach and Rachel King, and Zach's a fairly big like content creator and it's almost like a digital magician. Really cool. So not knowing any of that was happening, Rachel's a massive foster care advocate, and they are biological parents, foster parents, and adoptive parents. They've got the trifecta. They're incredible.
That's amazing.
And so I did an interview about that, right? This happens the same day. I get off the interview about how everyone can have a hand in fostering. Even if you can't be a foster parent, there's actually this thing called respite where you can be 24 hours and you can, in California at least, or in America, you can sign up and get qualified just to take kids for like 24 hours, 48, so they don't have to go into the system and all this kind of stuff. I start getting DMs about, why weren't you talking about abortion? And I was like, well, first of all, this interview was like today. It was National Foster Care Day. And I was like, first of all, fam, like, there are bigger issues here. And then I scrolled. It was a very strange moment because I scrolled, and there's one Christian influencer that said, if you are a Christian influencer and are not using your voice against abortion on social media right now, I question your salvation.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, well, damn. And then the second one underneath, it was a woman saying, also a Christian, saying, so you can, I can't tell you when to get a vaccination or wear a mask, but you can tell me what to do with my body. And you won't supply me the financial resources I need, nor give me the time off work to do it. Cool, 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 cool.
Yeah.
On top of each other. And it was just this moment where I was like, my God, this is why. Like, this is why I'm not going public with an opinion on it. And I refuse to give a public opinion on even this right now, because this isn't about that. It's not about where we stand. It's about, are you so going to die on a hill publicly about something that you're not even prepared to give resources to behind the scene for a mom who maybe her decision was that literally because of finance or because she didn't get the time off work to do that. And now you're going to shame her and tell her she's going to hell and is a baby killer. But now you want to receive grace on Sunday because you went and had sex with a boyfriend. Sick. Like, where are we at with grace and compassion and understanding that this is such a sensitive topic? And again, like Manny, I think, said, like, no one's saying they're on the side of killing babies at all. I'm on the side of, like, loving people. And sure, that sounds real vague and that sounds really, I don't actually care what it sounds like. It actually is true. So I just wonder if Jesus were walking the earth right now, if he was always offending the religious people.
Hello.
I mean, I think I never got into this, even when I was a Christian.
Brandon brought it up. It's his fault.
No. I mean, it's not a fault at all. Like, I feel like this is it's a conversation, you know, that's necessary, because I don't. I'm so far removed. I have friends that have gotten abortions, and they're amazing people.
Yeah.
They're amazing people. I used to have the idea, and I think a lot of people may have this. So, B, when you bring up, this is affecting, you know, people of color more than anything.
Mm-hmm.
I used to hear a lot of people say, well, then stop sleeping around. That was the answer, right?
Yeah. And then
while I was like, I guess that makes sense. Yeah, stop fucking sleeping around. Like, what the hell? Why are we sleeping around so much? And then
100% success rate to not get pregnant.
And then I remember my ass. And I was like, bruh.
Yeah.
How many times have you done stupid shit? And didn't want to live with the consequence of it for your whole life. I've told my fake pregnancy scare, you know, and it's fake because it wasn't, I didn't even have sex, but I still felt the emotions of like, oh my God, I'm going to have to carry this mistake. And again, I'm not saying I know what I would do, but I am saying that I've never been in the position to even contend with that immensely hard decision. So I care about it. Like, I really do care about it, but I cannot ever speak for someone who's going through a situation like that. And this is the decision that they're up against, because I just don't know what I would do if put in the situation. I love to say I would be noble and I would do this or I would do that. And I'm just like, bruh, you don't know. You don't know what you would do. So
I remember it hits home for me, and I get very passionate about protecting just so much hate, right? Like the fake caring. But like, what about the women whose lives are transformed forever?
Yeah.
I remember sitting outside a planned pregnancy place. And in the same way that maybe kids when they were little learned where the safe house was, and just in case they got lost in the neighborhood, remember that? I remember sitting outside it just to know where it was. It was a time in my life, it was before I was married and obviously before I was divorced. But like, I remember, like, I came to LA, lost my virginity in LA as a pastor on staff. And I remember thinking, there is no hope if I come to someone pregnant, but the easy fix is if I'm just then not pregnant. And I was obviously at that time, and I wasn't, like, I've never been pregnant, like, that I know. And I remember at the time being like, this is a really tough moment for me, because I don't want to sit outside here to know where it is. Mm-hmm. But I'm also very aware of my position. And if I was to ever get pregnant, this feels like the answer, because I am so terrified of trying to be in ministry and having to let people know that I got pregnant.
Wow.
Like, all I'm saying is there's a bigger issue here. And the issue, like, I am not pro killing babies, like we said, y'all.
Right.
So, like, calm down. All I'm saying is, can we ask the question, what terrifies them more? Why do they, like, in that nuanced sense? Because, again, as Brandon said, there's so many nuances to this. But just taking that for a second.
Yeah. Caring about the person who's actually about to do it. It's tough because you don't want to, meaning not me, but you don't want to if you're someone in the state of you're already judging them for doing that, you don't want to lay down your judgment to then have empathy for that person that you are currently disgusted with.
So it's easier to comment on someone's caption and say, I can't believe you are pro killing babies.
Mm-hmm.
Than to even
care about something that a whole society is caring about, then be a part of the solution, man.
Like, or just care about the person that's actually going through it. Like, it's
get off your keyboard and go and help someone.
Like, you know, one time, this is while you were talking, Bobice, it reminded me of one time. God,
only person in the world that calls me Bobice. Yeah.
I was that's affection. I was the only, I'm the only dude that does dumb shit like this. Okay, so. This is so dumb. Okay, so one time I was getting down with this girl and whatever, my soldiers marched. But once again,
why is that always an analogy?
It's not, it's because I'm a freaking tank. But again, once again, this was not sex. We were not having sex. We did not have sex. I was so afraid of pregnancy, right? But the soldiers did march close to the cave. And so, like, you know what we did because we were so scared? We went to CVS and got after morning
plan
pill.
B?
No, after morning pill.
Plan B?
Yeah. Plan B.
And fucking took that shit. Didn't even have sex. But we were so both believers, both whatever, and we were so riddled with guilt that we went and took that.
That's wild.
Isn't that crazy? I literally just remembered that, which I guess, that may be a form of, I don't know. I don't know what that would be considered.
It gets super nuanced. Like, even now, just that conversation, there's so many things that we could probably unpack for the next hour or so.
But that's a perfect example,
and
right?
It's a great example. And, you know, and then the other thing too, that it reflects a lot of times when how worked up people get over these conversations is, I realize, because my belief is that the only you that has ever existed is your great self, the self that God, the divine DNA, has been placed in. And the thing that we struggle with, some could call it the shadow self. You could refer to it as the small self, mm-hmm. Or the superficial self, is that most people stay in that place of the shallow self or the small self. And I think the goal of the kingdom of God, I think the goal of any good religion, is to rebind you to the greater self. Like re-religion is to rebind or to reconnect you with your greater self. Your greater self is the one that has always been secured in love. The one that has always had no fear. The one that has always had the utmost confidence and belief and inspiration and all these sorts of things. And so you realize when you get offended or when you get angry about things, you're operating in your small self. Because the great self is secure. So when people are getting like, when they're fake caring about things and they're getting all the rah-rah and stuff on Instagram, and I'm like, oh, you're living out of your small self right now. Mm. Yeah. And I think what Jesus invites us into is something greater than that. Right? We see it all the time. I mean, like, I believe that that's what most religion has not done for people, is transform them, has take them out of the smaller self into the greater self, right? There's this philosopher by the name of Ken Wilber, and he says this. It's this really long-ass quote, so bear with me. And he says, religion has two very important functions, but they're different. One, it acts as a way of creating meaning for the separate self. It offers myths and stories and tales and narratives and rituals that, taken together, they help the separate self make sense of the world and to make sense and to endure the slings and the arrows of outrageous fortune. And this function of religion, it doesn't usually or necessarily change the level of consciousness in the person. That is key. It does not deliver radical transformation. And nor does it deliver a shattering liberation from the separate self altogether. Rather, it consoles the self, fortifies the self, defends the self, promotes the self. So people who operate in this first level of religion, what happens is they adopt all these rituals, these myths, these stories, these tales that just reinforce them in that smaller self. And it makes them feel like they have this huge meaning, because now you slap a God sticker on the back of it. And now you're just now still an egocentric, selfish ass person who has not been transformed. And I think most of Christianity in America has been stuck at that function of religion.
Wow.
Now he argues that the second part of this is this, the function of religion. Let me see, where is this at? Two. Religion has also served in an unusual but very small minority. It says the function of radical transformation and liberation. This function of religion does not fortify the separate self, but utterly shatters it. There's no constellation, but devastation. Not entrenchment, but emptiness. Not complacency, but explosion. It's not to comfort your separate self, but it is a complete transformation at the deepest seat of consciousness itself. And this is what I've really been after, is like, I am kind of tired of Instagram Christians. I am really tired of like these Christians who are fake caring about things, because I realize we are seeing religion in a way where it has not transformed people. And this is also my problems with both the left and the right. Okay, I wouldn't completely identify like I'm on the left and I'm not on the right. It's because to me, it's the same consciousness behind both programs, right? Was it Albert Einstein who said the same consciousness that caused the problem can't be the same consciousness to answer the problem? Mm-hmm. That's my way of paraphrasing it. And so it's like, yeah, okay, you're seeing this from a different angle, but it's the same consciousness and you won't solve the problem. So what Christianity is trying to do is utterly transform the way you even think about things, right? It is to give you a whole new transformation of consciousness. So now all of a sudden you're thinking about things differently, you're seeing things differently. And I think the conversations now you're approaching from a different place. And like, really, this is what I've been after is like, I'm all for church programs and stuff. I'm all for small groups. I'm all for all the things that church spaces do. I'm all for it if it's causing transformation in actual people's lives. Where all of a sudden, you know, Paul, right? He says this in Galatians. He says, I have been crucified with Christ. It is no longer I who lives. What is he talking about there? Who's that I? It's a smaller I. It's a false self. He's saying when you've been entered in, all of a sudden, there is a greater thing that you are reconnected to, a greater self, a greater version of you that you now have access to and you live from. So I am like super challenged by this. And it has been the thing that every day I'm asking myself, man, is the way that I'm approaching problems in my life, is the way that I'm thinking about issues in our modern times, is this the thinking pattern of someone who has been transformed? And am I just getting angry and I'm not actually helping solve the problem because I'm just on the same level of consciousness that everyone else is with the rah-rah?
Yeah. I know people always ask me, why do I do the disagreement podcast? It's for this reason, because
I love it.
It's so like, it forces me, because I talk a lot of shit. Like, no, like you, we're talking about stuff that fake care about. I don't remember the last time I fake cared about anything. I'm as freaking raw as it gets, right? But I'm always talking shit about, I love people and I, you know, I have all this empathy and all this grace, right? But I be feeling the same stuff when these people first come at me. I get real like, oh, I'm going to kill them. And I even like take hella notes. I take hella notes. I'm ready to destroy these
people.
I want to see that notes app page. I have so many notes just ready to destroy.
This mother.
and then I do what B is saying. I ask myself, I say, are you wanting to win? Mm-hmm. Or do you want to love this person? Yeah. And I always ask that before I get on. And the second I ask that, I'm like, close the notes. And in the first minute or two, they're caught completely off guard. My first thing is, how you doing? How was your day? And I just start caring about them. I just literally start caring about them. And I know that they were expecting me to just come ready. And I throw them off their game. And from that day, they just know, oh, this dude is not anything that I thought I was. And I only do those things so that I can put myself in check, so that I can address the most hateful people and really find out, do I care? You know, do I really care? Or am I a fake person who does it for the gram? Which is why I did four and a half hour podcast. Because I'm like, bruh, I'm stupid and I really care. I really do care, because I think you're right. I think there is something bigger than the small stuff that we end up fake caring about.
Yeah.
And we'll stop right there, you guys. Thank you so much for listening to part one. Come back next week for part two. It's going to be amazing. Love you.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at remarkable.com today.